Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
Derek, this is our first regular episode since the beginning of the month.
We return everyone to their regular programming. Yeah, because we've been playing interviews and stuff from your trip down to the Quiet Adventure Symposium.
Yeah.
And so it's been mostly just like we would present each interview and move on.
Yeah.
But now we're back to chitter chatter and material and so on. So it's nice to be back.
It is. And we were talking about history.
Yes.
I can't. This is one of those rabbit holes we went down before we came on
it's
here.
Like, how did we get on this topic? We should be recording this.
So we talked about. we got on this little topic about history, and like if you were born in the early 1900s, and there's people that are still alive today that you know, like, and I just said, you know, like 1920 to 2024. I mean, you're 104 years old, sort of deal, but. There's some of them around. The stuff
that you would have seen.
That you would have seen. Just the changes in historical objects. And I mean, one of the things I said, as we get closer to current times, you know, I mean, you're talking about, well, the car is brand spanking new and people are still zipping around with horses and buggies and, stuff like that. And the closer to today, the more technology. It's like technology begets technology.
Exactly.
Right? But I mean, way back then, you're dealing with the old style wood canoes and stuff like that. And then you eventually getting up into the 60s and whatnot, you're getting into the Grumman canoes. And then you get closer to today, you're getting the lightweight.
Fiberglass.
Fiberglass and the Kevlar, the lightweight stuff. And
you wonder what's next. Like, what would be the next genesis of construction for, like, watercraft?
I don't know, but it's going to be invented by some AI guy.
It's going to be super light. Yeah. Like, the problem, though, with... Now, I think this is a problem. Like, when you get too light for a watercraft, they're not as easy to handle on water. You still need some weight. And I've been in some light canoes, solo paddling. It's like, I had to fill... Oh, it was, we were with Camper Christina. We were on in QE2 and my boat was just too light and I had to fill a dry bag full of water, put it in the bow to weight it down. Right.
Yep.
Just because it's like the wind catches you and whips you all over the place.
Yeah. Cause we're all on a solo.
Yeah. You can only go so light. But you got to wonder what is the next genesis for, you know, like
something as lightweight as paper, but strong as steel.
It's like Star Trek, the transparent aluminum.
Could you, okay, you want to go Star Trek here. Could you imagine getting to the takeout on a canoe trip?
Yeah.
That's a 5-kilometer takeout. But you stand on this pad at the beginning of the takeout. You press a button.
Levitation.
It teleports you to the other end of the portage in like half a second. That would be awesome.
But I like portages. You get to see stuff.
Well, when you get to the other end, I'll be there waiting for you. All refreshed and had a little snooze.
Maybe take all my gear. Take my pack. That way I can, you know, walk along whistling and looking at the birds and, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you know, like... You know what? Part of the thing about canoe trips is the portaging. Seeing if you can do it. Seeing how well you can do it and how much you can do. And
it's the one time where...
You're challenging yourself,
with
right?
Hiking, it's like, gotta go light, gotta go light, gotta go light. Hiking is like, I max weight. Max weight is 40-pound pack. You know, and that's too much. And yada, yada, yada. It's like... So with canoeing, it's like, I'm paddling. The boat's carrying all the weight until you get to the portage.
Right?
That's the one time where you go, oh, why did I bring this thing or that thing?
And did I need that chair?
Did I really need to bring a bag of wood? Or
did I really need to eat on this 3-week trip?
did I need my entire pot set?
Right? Yeah. 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 But yeah, just the history of stuff. I mean, we went off air there. We went... to about, you know, finding out more about our planet and stuff like that.
And
I think it was that we all started this because we're talking about AI and stuff on computers and all that sort of stuff. Like,
one of the things that that I think really kind of brings it around is like with technology and with advancements in technology, and it's one of the things that we've seen have made huge changes in knowledge of our own planet is like LIDAR and similar ground penetrating like radar and so on. Because with LIDAR, like, for example, what is it? The lake in Wisconsin, there were, somebody found a canoe on the bed of the lake. I can't remember how she found the first one.
Scuba diving.
And yes.
Yep.
So then
the second one.
And then they came back and they went in the wintertime using ground penetrating radar or LIDAR or something. And they found more canoes on the, and so it was common at the time. It's like, you don't want your canoe to dry out because it splits and cracks and whatever. So they learned a common preservative method of your watercraft is like, obviously, you know, a birch canoe, you want to keep dry, high and dry. But with these dugouts, you bury them in the mud or drop them bottom of the lake and you recover them in the spring.
Yeah.
But those sometimes get forgotten. If your canoe is on the bottom of the lake and only you know where it is and you pass away, well, somebody's going to find it 3,000 years from now.
Yeah.
And so that's what we've seen. And so we've discussed this where with technologies and stuff, they're finding what you mentioned in Greece. They found some old canoes and
Rome, north of Rome. There's like
Slovenia or Slovakia. They found some canoes. And so it's just amazing what we're starting to find out with these LIDARs. Like, you know, South America, Mexico, they're starting to find more and more Aztec ruins and that, you know, all these mysteries of we're starting to learn our own history. We're starting to get a more in-depth knowledge of our past. And it's all coming to be because of advancements in technology is enabling us to locate these things. Before, it's like, you know, you wouldn't think about it. There's a little hill somewhere in the English countryside and somebody goes, I think that was an old burial ground. Then they do ground penetrating radar. It's like, hey, there's like some stuff under here. There's like an entire Viking ship buried under this.
There's a movie about that.
There is.
Based on a true story.
Yeah, based on a true story.
Yeah.
And they're still finding stuff. And a lot of these things, it's until you can afford to pay the archaeological costs, they just leave these hummocks and hills to be because you're not allowed to just dig into them because you're curious. You have to pay for archaeologists. It's like any construction in like Rome or Italy or any major construction in England, you got to have some archaeologists on payroll to be ready to find what's being scooped up. Imagine how much stuff in the past was scooped up and thrown away because you didn't know what it was. It's like, hey, I'm trying to build a mall. Get away.
I can't remember. It's something hoard. Somebody's
hoard. Oh, yeah.
Over in England, the farmer's field. He was just over there. And then look at that. We found this. And they kept digging and digging. And
it's like, there's a lot of millions of dollars worth of stuff. All these Roman coins. Because somebody who had payroll for the Roman legions in London. And so it's like, well, hide it. They were in the middle of a battle, and the only person who knew where that box of gold was the guy who took a sword to the head.
Right?
So it's like that was lost for centuries.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, nice to be finding stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like you say, with the temples and stuff and
Thomas
the Temple Builder, because he was so accurate.
Exactly.
Because apparently aliens is not an option.
Well, we don't know.
I know.
We don't know what happened to the Aztecs or and
aliens. Nanu, nanu. Thomas the Temple Builder went to Beetlejuice or something. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the conversation with that. We got to be recording this.
Yeah.
But it's interesting just to see what we're finding, and it enabled us to have a deeper history of like watercraft that we found in Wisconsin and so on and around the world. A lot of these things are really starting to crop up now because of the ability to use LIDAR and ground penetrating radar and so on.
But like you say, I wonder what the next, how light do you think you could go with the watercraft?
Yeah.
I mean, you could go like a 2-pound boat if you know it's going to be structurally strong enough.
I think what they need to come up with is like those repulsor propulsor, just like that thing, like something, the levitating pads. It's like, you just hook it to your backpack.
And also, just do.
It lifts 50 pounds of weight off your back. You just come along, oh, my pack is so light today.
Oh, like, in, oh. Yeah, there's been, yeah, so like that maglift.
Yeah.
platform that you just pile all your gear on, yeah, and then you just tow it across the portage. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Could you imagine how pissed people would be if they saw you coming and you were the only one with that technology?
Hey!
And they're humping it through the woods with their canoe on their shoulder, and you're just, doo, 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 doo.
Well, I have a goat to carry my pack.
Right? Yeah. Oh, technology. You got to love it sometimes.
Well, you wonder, like, how is there, is it possible to become any more advanced, like with paddle technology? Or like we use, every, like when we first started seeing carbon Kevlar paddles come out, we already had carbon watercraft.
Mm-hmm.
And then the paddles came out. It's like, it was so expensive, but it's like, it's fascinating to see.
Well, what's the purpose of it? To make it lighter and stronger.
It is much stronger. It is much lighter.
So how much lighter and stronger does it need to be?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, and I've had this argument with Cliff Jacobson.
Yeah.
I prefer the weight
of a nice
of
wooden,
a wood paddle.
Yeah.
Because you feel yourself paddling with that sturdy hunk of wood, right?
The cherry paddle's slightly heavy, but it feels good. It's warm on the
hands.
But
how, like, and like I say, I mean, yeah, everybody would love to have a 2-pound canoe hiking through the woods, you know, or a kayak to take back to your car.
Yeah.
But realistically,
I think I saw a video once, and it comes to the technology part. It's like, yeah, I've got this really fancy carbon Kevlar paddle, and it's like, boom, you bang it on a couple rocks, it splits up the middle. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Well, I better find a birch tree, or no, I better find a pine tree. I'm going to carve my own paddle. I think who was it that we saw somebody carve a paddle on a trip? They lost the paddle in the water. Was it in one of the, I think it was one of the film fests. They're out west, and they were trying to go up river, and they had trouble. They lost almost all of their paddles, and then they carved a really rough paddle out of a pine tree.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, if you got it, you got it.
Yeah. Should have just went with the wood paddle to begin with.
Yeah.
But I, there comes a point where you've reached the end of the technology, I think.
You'd think, yeah. And
I mean, there's always going to be those people that push it, but
maybe we're just not thinking, maybe we're not creative enough to even imagine something more advanced than a carbon Kevlar paddle type thing.
But if you're talking about a 5-pound canoe, right? You're 16 foot long. Prospector canoe weighs 5 pounds. You pull it up to shore. You take all your gear out. A big wind comes up. And woo! It's off to Kansas.
It's a kite.
Like, you got to draw the line somewhere, exactly. Right? Yeah. And as you say, if you get something that light and you're trying to solo paddle, that's just going to spin you like a top.
Yeah. It's going to be a pain.
But if you're doing freestyle canoeing on the lake, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Negative weight canoes.
Negative weight canoes.
It weighs minus 5 pounds.
Well, there's, okay, let's just go into the future here, because we're just getting way off topic now. So if you have a canoe that will hover, for lack of a better term, over the water, it's not actually in the water.
These rapids are so easy.
But, that would be exactly it. So if you're zipping, if there's like 3 or 4 inches between the bottom of your boat and the water, but you're actually using the paddle to propel yourself, are you still canoeing?
Yes.
Where is that? Yeah. Where's that? What is the definition of canoeing at that point, or kayaking? Yeah,
and what's
right?
the point?
I mean, you're air kayaking?
Yes, exactly.
Air paddle, right? So you're actually using the water, and you're over the water, but your hull isn't actually on in the water.
True.
Right?
True.
So how far do you want to take this technology?
You could you could paddle over Niagara Falls. A nice swooping,
you go right over Niagara Falls and just keep on going. Hey, look up there. It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's Derek in a kayak. He just came over Niagara Falls, and he's still at that height.
He's floating like a feather to the bottom.
I mean, you just take it to the next logical thing, right? Like, it's going to be light, and if we ever do get hover technology, like, I mean, I think according to Back to the Future movie, we're supposed to have hoverboards now, which, I am so disappointed.
I know.
You know? But, no, if you want to take that, like, that changes definitions for a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
If you're not actually in the water. But, like I say, your paddle's still... You know, you're still using the force of the paddle through the water to push you along.
Unless you put thrusters on the paddles.
Well, then that's a motorboat.
No, you're just floating in the air. It's like a aircraft.
But see, then you're using power.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes, yeah.
So that's something. No, you're no longer paddling at that point. You might as well just put a couple of engines off to the side and call it a land speeder and call me Luke Skywalker.
I can go Mach 2 in my kayak.
Right? So can anybody make it from this point to that point? An hour. But it's 200 kilometers. An hour.
I can do it in 2 minutes. I have wormhole technology in my canoe.
Wormhole technology in my canoe. Oh, we've gone totally left field here now. And we've met up with those aliens you said didn't exist.
I know.
I told you they existed. All right.
Back to reality.
Back to reality. Oh, I got to start working on my hover technology. Note to self.
Discuss with aliens future technology.
Call Bebor later. See what he's got in store for me. Outrigger canoes.
Yes.
Let's talk about the outrigger canoe benefits. Because we always talk about what are the benefits of being outside, what are the benefits of, it's healthy to get out there and do some exercise. Outrigger canoe paddling, and not only Hawaii's state official sport, one of the most culturally significant activities in Hawaii and a history dating back thousands of years. Outrigger canoe races throughout the state every year. As many as 6 paddlers power a single hull canoe to compete in long and short distance races. We've all seen them. Born out of her love for paddling and its community, Simone Schmid, now a postdoctoral researcher at University of Hawaii, decided to focus her dissertation on measuring benefits the sport has to people with and without disabilities. Mm-hmm. Between March 7th and 10th, 58 paddlers from 3 islands across 30 canoe clubs came together to participate in Access MET's pilot study, 7 years in the making. During those 3 days, University of Hawaii public health researchers outfitted 4 out of 6 paddlers per boat with a portable metabolic analyzer to monitor their bodies during a 45-minute paddling session. See, this is full-on science this week.
Mm-hmm.
While many sports and activities such as walking, running, or lifting have established their METs, outrigger canoe paddling, an important culturally relevant activity in Hawaii and beyond, has yet to be measured, says Schmidt, who is a lead researcher for the study in the Thompson School of Social Work and Public Health and the Hawaii Department of Health Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion Division. That's a big business card. Establishing the corresponding METs will be instrumental in demonstrating the scientific benefits of paddling, including for paddlers who have physical disabilities. And we said, inclusion is a big thing now.
Yes.
And, accessible boat launch docks and stuff like that for people, in wheelchairs and that sort of stuff so they can get out on the water and paddle, that sort of deal. So if you're able to show that this is a benefit to them, then that's perfect. But there has been no scientific study done to show it.
For what?
For demonstrating if paddling is a benefit to people with physical disabilities.
Okay.
Which is one of the things she's trying to prove here, right?
So I'm pretty sure we have the MET data for paddling.
Yeah, but she's trying to show whether it's beneficial, how beneficial.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we all know getting outside and paddling is good for you.
But any sport in Olympics, they've dug into this, the science of any sport that's in the Olympics.
With the study now complete, All that's left is to tabulate the data, which Schmid said could take a few months. Her hypothesis is the results will show paddling is a moderate to vigorous activity for those with and without spinal cord injuries. The goal is to deliver individualized reports to paddlers who participated in the study. She began her research in 2016 during her time as a public health doctoral candidate. While working on her dissertation with Access Surf Hawaii, she identified a scientific gap in measuring METs during paddling and surfing activities, targeting both individuals with and without disabilities. This became the focus of her project, addressing the unique needs of the community. In doing her dissertation, Schmidt held a talk story where she asked the paddling community what they thought they needed. That's when they asked for metabolic equivalence, hard data to reveal the vigorousness of the ocean-based activity. Schmidt is also passionate about health quality in the community and the available activities for those with disabilities, including included in the study were paddlers with spinal cord injuries. So apparently there's data there, but it's not hard, detailed yes. data. She modeled this project after a decades-long groundbreaking study in METs for HULA, led by Native Hawaiian health researcher at the John A. Burns School of Medicine. Study required specialized equipment and funding that were not available at the time Schmidt began the work, and I guess now it is. This work is important from a public health perspective, says project mentor Tatine Sentel. Health promotion that supports activities and are important to individuals and communities builds on existing strengths and has deep value across multiple aspects of the support health and well-being. A recent University of Hawaii public health study found that 1 out of 5, or 20% of Hawaiian residents, have participated in outrigger paddling. Is particularly popular among Native Hawaiians, 42%, and Pacific Islanders, 31%. Mike Atwood, who's 74, has been paddling for 54 years. Wow, that's a while.
Yep.
He coaches high school and has paddled for Kaiapua for several years. He said, to be a paddler, you need a good respiratory system. He thinks the concept of the study is interesting as he thinks knowing the metrics while paddling could benefit competitive paddlers by honing in on their strengths and weaknesses. Personally, Atwood said that physical activity has helped slow the aging process. So maybe 54, 74 is the new 54. Beyond the health benefits, he says his cultural connection to the Hawaiian people, spanning hundreds of thousands of years, that makes it special. Initial results from the data collected are anticipated this summer. Schmidt plans to report back to the community, share results at scientific meetings, and publish a research later this year. Her long-term mission is to have canoe club memberships covered by health insurance. How cool would that be, huh?
There you go.
All my career was built around physical activity and health, not knowing it where it would lead here. She says, I fell in love with paddling in 2010. I'm thankful for all my coaches and paddling communities for what they taught me. I'm grateful to finally have the opportunity to do this METs project alongside the community and amazing paddlers. If you go to accesssurf.org/accessmets, you can visit that website. That's the project website for up-to-date information. So that's pretty cool.
That's very interesting.
They're taking all that information. 4 out of 6 paddlers in 30 boats.
One of the things that I meant to mention earlier, remember we talked about the science and age and people who were born at the turn of the century and yada, yada, yada. And so I just recalled there was a study, I think it was Norway or something, they studied like 25,000 people, and the study's been going on for like a decade or more, and it's an ongoing study. But right now they've determined that the physical limit of life for a human female is about 115 years old, and for a male it's about 114.7 or something. And whereas that doesn't talk about quality of life, but that's, they're talking about that physically, that's as long as humans are possible to live.
There was a show on TV we were watching about longevity and that, and there's, I think it's Sardinia, the island. in
Italy. In Italy, yes.
It's a blue island, they call it, because that's where the longest lived people in the world, the highest concentration.
Yes.
And like almost 100 everybody, and something is
like
is
almost
the
everybody, unless
age.
There's some sort of accident or incident.
Yeah.
Old age is very old age on that island.
Yeah.
And did they, I don't know if they know why. They just.
A lot of them say it's diet.
It, yeah.
Right.
But I don't know, like.
Apparently donuts ain't doing it. Donuts, coffee, and beer just ain't doing it.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
we're killing ourselves.
Yeah. That's, I mean.
And it just, again, it brings it back to this where they talk about physical activity. And you know what? Like, I know my dad, he's in a home. And when I visit him, it's like, you got to walk more, Dad. You got to walk more. You got to walk more. So a lot of these physical activities, like what she was saying in this study for her doctorate, is physical activity is slows the aging process. So get out, paddle, do something.
Do
right?
something, yeah. I mean, you look at the old-timey days when people were in the pioneer houses and the cabins.
Yeah.
They worked, like, all day just to survive, right? They had to do their farms. They had to cut wood. They had to build stuff. They had to, you know, feed the chickens and milk the chickens and feed the cows and whatever. So they were busy all the time, but they didn't have, like, the health care and everything that we do now.
No.
So if you got sick, I mean, you're gone.
Yeah, you broke a leg, you're dead.
Yeah.
It's just like the movie A Thousand Ways to Die in the West. Something. Yeah.
If you had that kind of work ethic and stuff now with the health technology.
Yep.
How long do you think those people would live?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. We're just asking too many questions this week.
Well, there's a limit on our genetic ability to, and it comes down to the organs in the brain, right? So you can only do so much for so long. Do it now.
Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it. And you know who you should do it with? A dog.
Is that a segue?
So two things came out of COVID. More people getting outdoors on the water.
Yep.
And a lot of dogs were adopted.
Yes.
A lot of dogs.
And
people are getting out on the water, and now they want to take their dogs with them.
Mm-hmm.
Canoe's easy.
Exactly.
It's
yeah,
a big bowl, jump in, dog,
yeah.
You know, sort of thing. If you're looking at a new kayak this summer, there's 8 kayaks, they say, and this was from a dog site. 8 kayaks that are good for dogs.
And this is, it just reminds me, we had just talked about some guy who was inventing a platform for the nose of kayak
for
the dog. And it's like he's strapped on. It's like, well, what if you roll over? He's tied to the... Anyways, yeah. So
he's your ex-dog.
Yes. So, but these are kayaks that
are all basically sit on tops,
but they're not designed for dogs.
No.
But they accommodate dogs.
Yes. So the first one, they say this is their best overall, is the Perception Tribe 13.5 sit-on-top kayak. 13 feet 5 inches long, 75-pound kayak, maximum weight 500 pounds.
79 pounds.
Yeah, so it's an 80-pound kayak, right?
Wow.
But the 500-pound maximum weight... So when you and Fluffy Scooby-Doo, the Great Dane, want to go out for the day.
My St. Bernard is going to go paddling with
me. So if you're 200 pounds and your dog's 200 pounds, you're still under that 500-pound limit. Just don't take the big cooler filled with beer and snacks.
Exactly.
This kayak offers plenty of space for you and your dog. It offers 2 very spacious seating areas with adjustable backs, comfortable paddling. Also, a molded center seat designed for kids or dogs. I can just picture my dog sitting in a seat. Kayak holds up to 500 pounds, so even giant breeds can take to the water in this boat. Perception is easy to handle and steer, especially for its size. While it has 2 carry handles, this kayak may be too heavy for one person to manage, especially when lifting on top of a car.
Yeah.
Well, if that dog wants to go paddling, he'd better kick in.
He'd better help out.
Number two, the Intex Excursion Pro Kayak. This is their best value. I didn't get into the pricing because spring's coming and a lot of them are fixing their prices now. So I didn't really get into the pricing of this. But this is supposed to be their best value. 12 feet, 7 inches, 39 pounds.
That's not bad.
As opposed to
save
the 80
money
pounder.
And price.
But you lose that extra 40 pounds or whatever it is, and you lose 100 pounds maximum weight. You can only take 400 pounds.
Yeah.
So you got to get a smaller dog. This inflatable kayak.
Dogs tend not to be that heavy anyways.
Hey, if it fits into a purse, it's a cat.
Hey, how much does your dog weigh? When was the last time you weighed your dog?
75 pounds.
Your dog is 75 pounds.
Yep. This inflatable kayak is made of tough PVC material designed to resist damage from water hazards. The same durability will help it resist your dog's claws as well.
Oh, that's good.
Keep your dog's claws clipped, and you can throw a heavy blanket down on the bottom to keep their feet off the bottom anyway. Because it's inflatable, the Excursion is easy to store and transport and light enough for one person to carry fairly easily. It inflates quickly and features adjustable footrests to comfortable paddling. Rear seat back can be removed to give your dog more room to lie down or stand. Because it's inflatable, this kayak likely won't last as long or be as durable as a hard shell boat, but it will provide good bang for your buck. This is the best value one. Now, the other thing to think about this is you're on a long hike trip with your dog.
Yep.
And then you blow up the kayak, your diggity dog, all the way back to where you started point. It's like pack rafting, but with an inflatable kayak with your pooch. Number three, Drift Sun Teton 120 Kayak. This is the premium choice. 12 feet. 2 inches, 72 pounds, so you're right back up there. 500 pounds max weight, so you're back up there. Super durable and versatile. The Drift Sun Teton 120 comes in at a higher price point than the rest of our list. Designed for long days on the water or multi-day excursions, this kayak features multiple fishing rod holders in case your dog wants to fish on the way. Built-in cup holders in case your dog's a drinker. And plenty of storage, including a sealed dry storage compartment. The double padded seat plus center seating area offer plenty of room for you, your dog, and maybe another human friend. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Wide and stable, this kayak can handle flat or choppy water and provide a smoother ride, helping your dog feel secure on board. While it's lighter than some other hard shell kayaks, this boat might still be tough for one person to carry and load. Well, it is a whole 7 pounds lighter than the perception.
Yes.
72 pounds. Woo. Yeah. Number four, the Ocean Kayak Malibu 2 at a whopping 12 feet.
So these ones, the rest of them don't have categories. The first three, one best overall, premium choice.
And these are just the rest.
These are just the rest.
Yeah. So the Ocean Kayak Malibu 2, 12 feet long, 57 pound.
Getting lighter.
425 pound maximum weight. Is an ocean kayak that also works on flat water such as lakes and calm rivers. Low sides make it easy for your dog to jump in and out. Kayak has two padded seats in the center area for your dog. Alternatively, single paddlers can sit in the center thanks to the design of the footrests. Boat doesn't have as much storage space as the two hard shells talked about earlier there, but is less expensive and lighter. It is a wide and stable in the water and handles fairly well despite its size. Paddles must be purchased separately.
Why would they mention that?
Because the rest of them, I guess, come with paddles.
Hmm.
Technically a paddle.
I find it interesting that the Malibu 2, they talk about it as an ocean kayak. I find it hard to visualize an ocean kayak as a sit on top.
Mm-hmm. Not that far. Well, you look at these guys doing the marlin fishing in that in the fishing kayaks,
true,
right?
True.
They're sit on tops, right? Yep. And I mean that other one comes with rod holders for your dog and a cup holder because your dog's a drinker.
Yeah.
Number five, BKU TK122U Fishing Kayak.
Oh, they really
dug deep. I think they got that from Star Wars.
They really dug deep for the creativeness for the name.
Right? The R2-D2 of the kayaks.
Yeah.
12 feet 6 inches long, 74 pound kayak weight, and 770 pound
max. Wow.
So you can take two Great Danes with you, Scooby-Doo and Scrappy-Doo.
Why does it have such a high capacity?
It's a fishing kayak. Tend to be a good choice for paddling with dogs because they're designed to be extra stable in the water.
Hmm.
This one offers very high maximum weight capacity, so you don't have to worry about carrying even the largest of dogs. It has double dry storage compartments and sturdy aluminum seats for comfortable paddling. Downside is the extra seat can't be removed, so your dog has to learn to sit. Although there should still be space for your dog. Although this is a sit-on-top kayak, the interior is a little bit deeper than others, which could help your dog feel more secure, especially when you're just starting out on the water together. So if you're learning,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're just taking a new dog out on the water, it's got that little bit of a deeper feel to it, so maybe the dog will feel a bit better. But yeah, 770 pounds.
That's incredible.
Right? You can take your dog like a mm-hmm. kayak trip.
They should have done something better for the name.
BKUTK122U fishing kayak.
It just rolls.
No,
how it just much rolls off the tongue.
Number 6, the Solstice inflatable kayak. 11 feet long, 40 pounds, 440 pound maximum weight.
That's a lot for an inflatable.
Mm-hmm. A sleek, easy-to-maneuver inflatable kayak, the Solstice is light enough to be carried and paddled by a wide range of people. It's easy to inflate and packs up small when deflated for easy storage and transport. Floor of this kayak is tough to withstand dog claw damage.
Wow.
Again, just throw a thick blanket down there.
Yeah, yeah, them. Yeah.
While the kayak holds up to 440 pounds. It is about a foot shorter than the other kayaks we've reviewed and could be a little tight when paddling with a big dog.
Huh.
Dog's probably a lap dog anyway.
But what's nice is it's inflatable,
mm-hmm.
packable.
Seats are easier to move around to find the perfect paddling location and allow your dog room to stretch out. Users report this kayak is stable in the water and fast enough to run in white water.
What?
Leave your dog at home for that one.
Mike Burns, me and Mike have, we've run with Willow, like uh-huh. in white water.
Yeah. Yeah, I would do it in white water in a canoe, but mm-hmm. not an inflatable kayak.
No.
Your dog would be, yeah.
Yeah.
Number 7, the Sea Eagle inflatable kayak. 12 feet 5 inches, 32 pounds, 650 pound maximum weight. The Sea Eagle has the highest max weight capacity of the inflatable kayaks that have been reviewed. It's also long and roomy, designed to carry three people. Nah. So plenty of space for your dog. The boat inflates in about 10 minutes, packs up small for easy transport. The seats in this kayak are movable, allowing you to figure out just the right arrangement to keep you and your dog comfortable. See, something like this, you got your dog, maybe in front of you,
mm-hmm.
and then all your gear behind you. Because some of these, if you see the pictures of these kayaks, you're sitting in the middle sort of deal, and the dog's behind you.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
No, you want to see...
I want the dog in front of me.
Yeah.
Not because it's back there making faces at me, but I don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah, I found that when I've paddled with Mike, with Willow, when I'm in the bow seat, it takes me by surprise when Willow, like she'll see something on one side of the canoe or yeah. the other. And so I won't know that she's seen something and moving until I suddenly feel the boat jerk sideways it's like a panic. I'm tipping. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
it's very disconcerting when
some of the videos Mike's posted, you can see she
yeah.
does one side and you just do this whole
yeah.
jerk thing to yeah. the side thinking, sit down, dog. some users found the seats weren't very sturdy, however, which decreased the comfort level when paddling. Like many inflatables, this kayak can have a tough time in windy conditions. But again, like I say, with these inflatable ones, this would be perfect for, because I don't know that I want to do a pack raft thing, hike 50 miles and then take 50 miles back by river in a pack raft with a dog.
Mm-hmm. No, no.
But something like an inflatable kayak where you got that room, I think I would do that. Number eight, the Old Town Vapor 10 kayak. 10 feet long.
It's an old town.
the shortest of them
all. Yeah, it is the shortest.
47 pounds. Handles 325 pound maximum weight. That's not very much.
Mm.
Old Town Vapor is a sit-in kayak, but the cockpit is oversized, allowing room for your dog to join you. There's also storage space between the cockpit that could serve... Or, sorry, behind the cockpit that could serve as a sitting space for a dog. We just talked about that. While the kayak has only 325-pound max weight limit, chances are a giant dog wouldn't fit in this boat anyway. As a single kayak, this boat is light enough for one person to carry and handle. It's also shorter at 10 feet in length, making it easier to store than some of the larger tandem options. Sit-in kayaks often feel more secure to paddle in. It is a good balance between that security and space for your dog. Something like this would be perfect for, you know, if you got one of those little shih tzus or poodles or chihuahua or a cat.
Yeah. Cat.
Guinea pig, squirrel, that sort of thing.
Backcountry camping with your cat.
Right? You know what? Don't laugh because we've seen people out camping.
Have you?
And they've had a cat.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, that's whatever floats your boat, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are eight choices if you want to take your diggity dog kayaking with you.
Yeah, if you prefer kayaks, if you prefer kayak fishing and stuff and you want to bring your dog, this is a nice list to peruse to decide if you want to pick one, especially for going kayaking with fishing, kayaking, or whatever with your dog.
Yeah. But before you go kayaking with your dog.
Yes, there's some considerations.
Overall, the best kayaks for dogs are roomy, stable, and have a high maximum weight capacity. Especially, like I say, I mean, when I think of a dog going paddling, a lot of them are 60 to 80 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're talking labs and retrievers and
ones that are huskies. More suited to the backcountry and they're water dogs or stuff like that.
Other features are primarily for your benefit rather than the dog, except if your dog drinks and fishes, who probably doesn't care whether you have a cup holder or not. First step is a successful water adventure with your dog is selecting the right kayak. No matter how much you want your dog to be your adventure buddy, not every dog is cut out for the job. If your dog has never shown any interest in water or is actively afraid of it, chances are they may be less than enthusiastic about kayaking.
Absolutely.
Don't force your dog. If your dog is afraid of the water, doesn't want anything to do with it, go get another dog. Everybody needs at least two dogs. On the other hand, a dog who's never been around water may turn out to be a fabulous kayaker. leaves you at home and goes off. If your dog is well trained and socialized and fairly adaptable overall, chances are they can learn to be comfortable in a kayak. I mean, like Athena never had any interest in being a canoe dog until I
introduced her
to a canoe.
She was right? 6 months old before she was ever in a canoe.
Yep, I started training her at 6 months old in the front yard. Number one, get your dog a PFD.
Oh, yes.
Right? Because just like you, if you tip and the dog bonks its head, it doesn't matter if it can swim or not.
And even if they're a good swimmer, like there's limits to how long a dog can swim for before they get exhausted. Or in hypothermic conditions, if the dog is they can handle the cold better than us, but they still get hypothermic. And so once they start to struggle with that, they're going to need some extra flotation to help them out.
You didn't learn how to kayak overnight and neither will your dog. Take your time getting your dog used to the kayak on dry land before you advance to water. And that's what I do with Athena and the canoe. Place the kayak somewhere. Your dog will see it often and become accustomed to it. Allow them to investigate the kayak and reward them if they climb in on their own. Decide where you want your dog to ride and begin teaching them how to settle there. And with us, it's in the canoe. She's just in front of me. I'm in the back seat,
yeah.
And she's just in front of me before the yoke, right? Because that way, if I need to, I can, you know, I got control. I can grab her. I can make her sit. I can move her butt to one side or the other, depending on where we're leaning, that sort of stuff. Once your dog is comfortable with the kayak on land, move to water. But again, take things slowly. If your dog seems stressed at any point, slow down. Continue to use positive reinforcement to teach your dog how to behave in the kayak. If your dog is food motivated, get some little treats. The goal is to get them comfortable and trained on where to sit or lay in the kayak in shallow water before you attempt a longer trip. When you're ready for your first kayak adventure with your pup, make sure you're packed and prepared with all the gear you might need. Make sure you have water for you and your dog and a way to keep them cool if it's hot out. Dogs with short hair and light skin might need sunscreen for protection. We actually put a buff around her head, Athena's head, this past summer because it was getting really hot. So it was sort of acted as a sunbreak.
Yeah.
For the top of her head, the inside of her ears.
If you keep it wet, it keeps her cool.
Yeah.
And it also keeps the bugs away from getting
in. Well, there's no bugs, but the sun, I mean, you got those ears. But it will help the bugs. Those ears of hers that look like, you know, the
satellite dishes.
Yeah. You know, it stopped them from getting burned on the inside too, right?
What I'm saying is that it is additionally, like for anybody with a dog, the buffs will help cool them, helps keep the sun off them, protects their ears, keeps the bugs away. They're like, horseflies love dogs. And it's going to make them uncomfortable. If you keep the horseflies away, whatever. Mike always, I keep going back to Mike, but he's the only one I paddle with who has a dog. So Willow just loved this old piece of fabric that he would just, you'd only see her nose poking out, but she liked it because it kept the bugs away from her, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
As you mentioned hypothermia and stuff like that, one of our listeners, Travis Smith, he sent me a message a little bit ago about dog vests because we were talking about dog dry suits, episode 412. He says, we used a neoprene dog vest when we were duck hunting. It did not cover all the dog, but it worked very well. Had some flotation to keep the dog warm. It worked well enough that if your hands were cold, you could put them under the vest to warm them a little.
Use the dog as a heat pack.
Downside of this is that your hands smelled like a big wet dog. You ended up with a very hairy hand. I found some on Amazon, $30 to $60, depending on the brand. So there's people that out there that... There is things that you can get on, to put on your dog if need be. And bring your dog's collar and leash, but never attach them to the kayak.
Yeah.
This could be disastrous if the kayak overturns and your dog becomes trapped underneath it.
Exactly.
Optional item that could make the trip more comfortable for your dog is a pair of doggles.
Yes.
Or dog goggles. This product protects the dog's eyes from water and sun. If you're wearing sunglasses, I usually have a pair of sunglasses, but they're always on my the brim of my hat.
Yeah,
because I just don't know I don't see as well through sunglasses.
Hmm.
I prefer, but I know that the sun glinting off the water is straining my eyes, but I see better without sunglasses.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
My eyes are sensitive to bright light, so I always wear sunglasses.
It's so sensitive. So those are 8 kayaks and things you should do before kayaking with your dog. So get Rover or Spot or whatever out there and get them on the water. Teach them slowly. Be patient.
And protect them just like you protect yourself. Your dog
wants to be out there with you. You know. But be prepared. If your dog sees you going in the kayak and you're not taking them with you, they're going to be angry. Angry. let's get into some rafting stuff. A couple of rafting things here. Tributary Whitewater. It's an outfitter out in California. They are gearing up for a promising whitewater rafting season in California and Oregon after a strong winter.
Yes.
Crucial link between the mountains and rivers, the Sierra Nevada Mountains will particularly provide a steady surge of runoff from April through July. This optimistic river flow forecast follows a recent winter storm that swept through the Tahoe region in early March, significantly boosting precipitation and snowpack accumulation. We're thrilled to announce the upcoming rafting season is shaping up to be one of the best yet, says Tributary Whitewaters owner Jeremiah Copper. Recent storm has us excited to run trips on rivers that are not always guaranteed, including the North Fork American River, East Fork Carson River, and North Yuba River. Traditionally, October through April marks the wet season in California with precipitation playing a pivotal role in determining rivers' flows. March storms set the stage for promising river conditions in the coming months. A recent boost in snowpack has us eager to get on the river, says Copper. Our season starts at the beginning of April, and we can't wait to share these highly sought-after river trips that rely on natural flows with clients. The North Yuba River, located in Downeyville, California, offers highly sought-after Class 4 trips, which only run during high snow years. East Fork Carson River two-day rafting trips near South Lake Tahoe also rely on natural flows from snowmelt, feature hot springs and Class 2 rapids, perfect for young families ages 4+. That sounds like a good one, a couple of days.
I'm in.
Near Sacramento, North Fork American River rafting trips will also run this spring season and are highly sought after Class 4 trips. Additionally, the Owyhee River in eastern Oregon features four-day rafting trips with hot springs, relies on natural river flows, and has a strong spring season ahead. As excitement builds for the rafting season, the team at Tributary Whitewater remains committed to providing safe and memorable experiences for adventurers of all skill levels. For more information, a full list of whitewater rafting trips can be found at tributarywhitewater.com. So four places that, if you didn't have this extra snow...
Yeah, this is exciting.
These trips don't happen.
Yeah, and we've had a lack of snowfall precipitation over the winter here, and so it is nice to see that there. You can see that the reservoirs in California and in the western states they are increasing, but this snowpack this year in California, like they're talking 30 feet in like Donner Pass, and it's incredible how much snow they're getting. And things are changing. You get into all these different weather patterns, and it would be nice to see a little bit more precipitation here in Ontario, because as it is, the lake is pretty low. Lake Ontario is pretty low, so it's like, that's going to be challenging going forward. And I want, like, northern Ontario, we did get a lot of snow and precipitation, so those will be river running. Good for river running, but but we didn't have a lot, so I think we might have a lot of people might tend to do trips in September, August, September, and it might be too dry to do stuff like that, right?
I'm even thinking of taking my October solo trip I usually do, my week-long trip at Thanksgiving, and moving it to August.
Yeah.
Just to make sure wherever I go is going to have water.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like the other day, we had nothing. And then all of a sudden we ended up with, 6 inches of snow?
Yeah, yeah.
And by the next day, like, 90% of it's gone.
Yes.
Yeah. Because all of a sudden it's 11 degrees Celsius. What?
Yeah. I only did the sidewalk at home when we had that snowfall. It was like, well, I'm not shoveling the driveway.
Oh, well, you know what? I shoveled the driveway because the plow came along and made a little pile at the back.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to melt, and if it didn't melt all the way, it was going to be ice, and it was going to be heavy waterlogged snow.
Yeah.
So as it was really lightweight, took me no time at all. But I saw people using their snow blowers, and I am sure the only reason they were doing it,
it
was the only time they got to use them this year.
I'm using this year.
I bought that snow blower a couple of years ago thinking, you know what, I'm tired of doing this, and I've got to use it, I think, 3 times. And not this year at all.
Yeah.
I'm just like, Anyway, speaking of low water in Lake Ontario, I have to do my March paddle.
You haven't been in the water yet?
No, because I'm still dealing with this that back issue I had.
Oh,
after
you're running out of time.
After my
because this is
on leap day February 29th, I went.
Yeah,
I should not have.
No,
that I buggered it so bad, and then Michigan the next day.
You've only got a few days left.
So, like I say, I was doing it the May 2-4 weekend. Yeah. I've done it Thanksgiving. I've done it. New Year's Eve, I've done it the leap day. So I figure Good Friday is in March.
Yeah.
And Easter Monday is in April.
Oh, there you go.
Right? So they're both this weekend. So if I get out this Friday and this Monday,
there you go.
Bam.
And that's all
a full year.
That's all
months. That's a full year. At least once a month for a full year. And you know what that means? Nothing. Absolutely gets me nothing.
Exactly.
Except the fact that I can say I've done it.
Yeah.
I paddled once a month all year. It's gotten me nothing.
Yeah.
But if I go up Duffins, I'm going to take my canoe pole.
Yes.
Because it's shallower, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm just going to canoe pole up Duffins Creek, or maybe I'll go to the Rouge or something, and canoe pole up the Rouge or something like that. Dun-da-da! It'll be fun. It'll be great. Groovy, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Awesome. my back thing turned into a sciatica thing that went into my hip and down to my knee.
And it's still bothering you.
Yeah, my knee was, like, pretty numb.
You know, it's probably a good cause of that.
What?
Most likely. Is you're old.
No, the oldness causes other things.
Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. This isn't an old guy thing.
It's an out of shape guy thing.
This is a one day I fell down the stairs over a stupid cat thing.
Or I slept wrong thing.
I slept wrong. I one good sneeze from total paralysis. Oh, man. Hey, do you know where the Teesta River is?
The Teesta River?
Yeah.
I do not know.
You should know.
Why should I know?
I don't know.
Because I should read the material before we do it?
It runs through India and Bangladesh.
Oh. Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, see, sure. I knew you knew that. I told you. We've talked about this areas before. Since October 4th last year, there was a flash flood had occurred in the Teesta River, which runs through India and Bangladesh. Rafting is a popular adventure sport in that region, and it was stopped after the flash flood. The natural disaster had big implications on it. You couldn't get to the locations where rafts carrying tourists and adventure enthusiasts were launched and stuff like that. And 5 months now, no rafting. Not allowed.
Why are they limiting it? Do they say?
Because of the big flash flood destroyed everything.
But the river's still there.
But you can't get to where you need to
launch
from.
You can't get to the river.
Yeah, roads are gone and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Tourism Department of the Gorkhaland Territorial Administration of the GTA resumed rafting on the Teesta River after a gap of 5 months. So it's back on now. We resumed rafting in the Teesta from today and will continue until June 15th when the monsoons set in, says the Assistant Director of Tourism of the GTA. After the flash flood, the Kalimpong District Administration and the Indian Army recommended a halt in rafting for two reasons. Number one was the high water level in the river, which receded in due course. The other was that explosives from army camps had been swept away in the Teesta and could explode on contact with the rafts. Now, if I'm an outfitter and one of my rafts filled with tourists, paying tourists, goes down, hits some explosives, and kablooey.
I did not see this coming.
That's not in my brochure.
It's not your typical hazard. It's not your typical river hazard.
Oh, here's an extra form to sign that we're not.
Why are you guys putting mines in the river?
Do you like Mission Impossible? Yes. You'll love this trip. You're going to love it, because chances are.
We're in the water, but you got to bring a parachute for the return trip.
Yeah. Some, wow. I guess some explosives went down. They could, yeah, kaboomy.
I wouldn't think they'd still be explosive if they're in the water.
Depends what they are, I guess. Then
I don't know much about explosives, so.
Nitroglycerin, I guess. They hit a box of that kablooey.
Wow.
It was an earth-shattering kaboom. After several surveys jointly with officials of the State Forest Department and Kalimpong District Administration, they decided to allow rafting from now on. We consulted with our chief executive, Anit Thapa, and launched it according to his instructions. Dawa Sherpa, the chief adventure coordinator of the Department of Tourism of the GTA, has issued a set of safety guidelines to private operators who run the rafting facility. Number one, don't hit the explosive boxes.
That's an unusual briefing before your day. Okay, everybody, okay. We're going to get out with our paddles. We're going to do some stretches. And
if you see a box.
See a box.
Please point it out and don't touch it. Why? Trust me. You don't want to know.
We can't tell you, but.
You hit the box, didn't you? representative of, oh, sorry, yeah, these include complimentary. A compulsory use of safety gear like helmets and life vests. Wouldn't that be
bombs
already?
Bomb vests.
Bomb vests while rafting. Prohibition on swimming while rafting.
What if I fall out?
Don't grab the box! Maintenance of rafts and first aid kits in small rafts.
In case you get explosive, you need to patch that gigantic hole.
representative of the Teesta Rangit River Rafters Welfare Association, the association of private operators which functions under the GTA's tourism department, said they would use around 30 rafts for adventure sports. They said that in the swollen Teesta on October 4th swept away more than 30 rafts, several vehicles used for transporting passengers, and rafts to the riverbanks. And the number of makeshift stalls used as ticket counters. As a result, the earnings of around 300 people dependent on this adventure sport had stopped.
Well, all their gear got washed away.
Everything got washed away. Yeah, trucks and everything.
Eh? That's not good.
The resumption of this water sport is a major relief for us. We faced acute hardships for the past 5 months. We believe that in another couple of months, we will be able to recover from the crisis. The president of the association says, he said the rafts would now be run on two routes. One is a 3.5-kilometer stretch from Balukola to La Brabote. The other is a 7-kilometer route from 7th Mile to La Brabote. Each ride will have 5 passengers, a guide, and an assistant will accompany them.
The assistant is military personnel.
He's got a pair of binoculars. He's got a little set of binoculars. Just checking out. Hey, yeah, you might want to take the left side of that rock today.
We have an unusual hazard in the river today.
Does that look like a box to you? Could you imagine, though? You're just paddling along. The raft in front of you just
what the
kablooey?
Heck? Who's shooting at us?
Well, I guess we can't keep this a secret anymore. Yeah. Or not knowing. Just not knowing, and all of a sudden. Kablooey.
Yeah.
So there I was paddling down the river. Well, I hope they've found, or like you say, hopefully the water has damaged them enough that they're not a problem now. Because they were a problem 5 months ago.
Yeah. And now that they're waterlogged, maybe not. Like, it really depends on what kind of explosives. Like, is it dynamite or is it C4? Is it, who knows, C4 needs an ignition source, whereas dynamite could, oopsie, right? If it's old enough.
Like I say, I don't know enough about explosives to
throw a couple of these. Hey, I found some sticks on the edge. Just have a campfire.
Go gather some sticks over there in that box. This is great camping out here. They got a box filled with sticks.
Light a couple. Look at all the firewood.
Oh my god. to stay on the rafting thing, not so explosive. Could more days where whitewater rafting is available on the Ocoee River beyond the horizon? One Tennessee lawmaker is floating that idea.
They limit how many days? The government limits?
Representative Dan Howell says he's sponsoring a bill that would let the Ocoee River Recreation and Economic Development Fund Board, or the ORRED, work with the Deputy Commissioner of State Parks to negotiate with TVA for more water release days during the rafting season. So the dam.
Now it makes sense. It's water release, just like
Madawaska.
Madawaska, where they have the release time between 9 and 4 or something.
Yeah. Howell, who chairs ORED, says those extra days could raise tide of tourism for the area. If passed, House Bill 1946 will designate the Ocoee as an Olympic River in keeping with the Tennessee Scenic Rivers Act. The bill would allow up for 24 outfitter permits for whitewater rafting at the Ocoee River Recreational Area. Legislation always also allows permit holders who wish to retire or sell their business to transfer permits, which current state law does not allow. So if I'm an outfitter and I have permits, and I'm like, you know what, it's time for me to retire, and I sell my business to you, then I can sell you my permits as well.
Yeah.
Right now, I can't do that. Right?
Oh.
But if this bill goes through,
they will allow.
They will allow it. Yeah. Which is kind of, why would I buy your outfitter business if I can't
have
outfit?
Yeah.
Right. The Ocoee River is a magnificent natural resource that boasts some of the best whitewater rafting in the world, Howell says. This bill will allow for additional water releases for Tennesseans and tourists to enjoy being on the water, drawing more people to the region and further boosting our economy. The Volunteer State is blessed with immense natural beauty, and it's important to encourage people to enjoy the great outdoors. Ocoee River, which is part of the Tennessee State Park System, boasts class 3 and 4 rapids and was the venue for the 1996 Summer Olympics canoe slalom event. Cool. More than 220,000 paddlers ride these rapids each year, contributing almost $44 million annually to the region and providing more than 600 jobs.
That's a huge influx of cash to the area just for...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so if they can get some more, I hope this passes.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not really asking for much.
Yeah, well, all they're doing is, and what it comes down to is water release days. It's so they expand the water release days, which is just like it's same pattern that Madawaska Canoe Center uses. Mm-hmm. It's they have a release contract to, because, you know, before maybe they would just release at night or something, or now they're going to, you have a set amount of release. And this here, they're looking for more days to release to increase paddling days. Or
yeah, I'm sure they got to check out what happens downstream from this as well.
But
if it's just a matter of getting these people to release water, then excellent. Last thing I've got on my list here, the eclipse. Everybody's been talking about the eclipse for the last 4 or 5 months. Are you going to go see the eclipse? We can't see the full eclipse in Toronto, so everybody's driving down to Burlington and Niagara and taking days off and... been hearing about people that are going to gather out on the water and watch the eclipse on April 8th. Depending where you are, it basically cuts up from like Texas across the states to Maine and then onward.
And Lake Ontario is right in the path.
It's, well, the southern part. So, like, apparently, if you want to see the full thing, you got to go down towards the Niagara region.
Yeah.
But in Toronto, you'll just see like most of it.
Yes. It's enough.
If you're going out, be safe out there. Wear a PFD if you're on the water, and in areas of cold water, wear a dry suit. Especially up this way, it's still not spring weather out there. It's spring weather, but it's not warm swimming, get wet weather. Wear a dry suit or stay on the land and watch it safely. Except during the brief total phase of the total solar eclipse, when the moon completely blocks the sun's bright face, it is not safe to look directly at the sun without specialized eye protection for solar viewing. Viewing any part of the bright sun through a camera lens, binoculars, or telescope without special purpose solar filter secured over the front of the optics will secure will instantly cause severe eye injury.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very specific about this because I have solar burn from looking at an eclipse when I was a kid.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got solar burn in one of my eyes.
Oh, is it still there? Is it still damaged?
Oh, yeah. 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 If I, you know, those stereo thingies where you stare and you're supposed to see images? Mm-hmm. No, the whole thing just blocks out.
Oh.
Yeah. It's weird. Anyway. Yeah, I got solar burn on one of my eyes from looking at an eclipse when I was a kid.
Did your dad call you an idiot?
I call myself an idiot. I mean, we didn't know back then. We were making those boxes that you're supposed to be able to look through.
Pinhole.
The pinhole ones? Yeah, I guess I made it wrong. I don't know. Because apparently my teacher wasn't...
You're not supposed to look through the pinhole.
Yeah.
You're supposed to look at the image on the back of the box.
Right? So, I don't know. Anyway. It's not really stopped me from doing anything my entire life.
Yeah.
Just, you know, don't do it. Putz. That is all I've got this week. You got anything?
Wanted to, like, I don't think we did we mention it or not, but Dwayne and Marion Sontag, they have that bearskin
Dwayne and Marion of the camping family.
Yep. Yep.
Is it Bearskin Lodge?
Yes.
Just north of Killarney.
Yes.
Yeah.
So congrats to them. That's awesome. And now I look forward to, I don't know. I would only go there because they have it there because I wouldn't normally go to a resort like that. But we're planning on going for a week.
Are you?
Yeah. We haven't fully planned it out and it might not be this year because they're booking up pretty quick. But maybe next year.
Dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm.
Maybe a couple nights leading into a trip or something and spending a couple nights in one of their cabins, meet up with them,
start your trip there, end your trip there.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
You get a good night's sleep and then head out first thing in the morning.
Exactly.
Awesome. So, yeah, congrats to them.
Yeah, congrats to them. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's about it then. If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, all your favorite podcast downloading sites. If you go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, you can stream or download our episodes there. We've also started putting them up on YouTube. I also put a quick little cooking video on YouTube because I tested my Dutch oven, my twig stove, my reflector oven in my backyard. Made a big meal of lemon chicken, glazed carrots, and bannock.
That's awesome.
It was really tasty. And now I know everything works that if I want to take all that stuff in the backcountry, I can. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends and family and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.